The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Michael White and this is Conference Daily. Nick Clegg may have been and gone off to New York, but in Liverpool, the Lib Dems conference show goes on. Yesterday, the leader's forward-looking speech, very forward-looking, put a spring in everyone's step. But fears persist that the party will be hit hard when the public turn against those spending cuts. It's already starting to happen. The Lib Dems are bumping along in the low teens in several opinion polls, and their own proposed changes to constituency boundaries could do even more damage to the party's election chances next time, though that point is disputed. But today, potential troublemaker, deputy party leader, don't forget, Simon Hughes, refused to detonate on stage and threw his weight generously behind Clegg.
We could not, at this most important year in our party's history, have wished for a leader with greater determination, energy and integrity, and yes, ambition, not for himself, but for the party we all love, and determination for the liberty and social justice which Liberal Democrats work daily to achieve. He has done us fantastically well, and we owe him enormous debt of gratitude.
My impression is that the Lib Dems are enjoying being in government, not half as much as their ministers are enjoying it, but nonetheless, they're rather pleased. They're wary, they're a bit nervous about what the future may hold. But is there more going on beneath the surface? Let's hear what a cross-section of activists, MPs, and even a couple of peers think. Outside the conference hall, we'll stop them now. I'm here with Celia Thomas, who used to be a pillar of the Lib Dem Whip's office in the House of Lords as long as I can remember, which is quite a long time, me and Lloyd George. And if you ever had a question, a technical question or a factual question, you'd always get it from Celia. Lo and behold, one day, they put her on the list and made her appear. So she's now Baroness Thomas. Now, you said a moment ago, everybody's cheerful about the coalition, but when you look at the opinion polls, I know you lot in the House of Lords don't have to get elected, not yet anyway, but don't you worry about the polls where you've dropped quite badly and Tories don't seem to be suffering?
We expected it, to be honest, because after an election, we always do drop. But I think what is so funny is that we're only 4 months into a coalition, although I noticed some parliamentarians inflate this. Somebody said they'd been in office 6 months. I thought that was an interesting arithmetical sum. But anyway, the coalition has been going 4 months. So things may look a bit bleak at this moment with some sectors of the population. But there are some very, very interesting changes on the way in my particular field, which is work and pensions. We've got to look at the proposals which Ian Duncan Smith is possibly, we hope, going to get through the Treasury, and that could transform life for people on benefits.
If he gets it through the Treasury, it's a very big if.
It's a very big if, but if he does, and it sounds as though he's staked his reputation on getting it through, which is fantastic. It's something that Liberals, before the Lib Dems even, have been calling for years. And so, really, this could be very, very exciting. So, looking at things from this perspective, it's too early to get the full picture.
Okay. We're outside the conference hall with John Shipley, who I've known since he was 18. We read history together at the history department, oddly enough, at University College London. But now he's Lord Shipley, and he's become, in the intervening years, he's done something useful, not like me. He's become a big city boss, has run Newcastle with great distinction on and off over the years. How's the conference, John?
Well, I'm really pleased with the way things have gone. I mean, the biggest conference I can ever recall, and a great sense of unity here, actually. I think Nick Clegg's speech yesterday bound the conference together. There is a sense of common purpose here in kind of addressing the difficulties caused by the deficit, and at the same time, adopting clear Liberal Democrat policies in government.
Well, you must have run deficits in your time in a big city. What about the difficulty caused by being in a sort of slightly improbable coalition with a party you've been historically opposed to for even longer than you've been
alive.
Well,
the Conservative Party is an amalgamation of, different thinking. And I think what's happened is that David Cameron, forging an alliance with the Liberal Democrats, actually has enabled him to ditch some of the more right-wing policies that the Conservative Party has been associated with, not least around the justice agenda, where I just think with Kenneth Clark and Lord McNally now running the Justice Ministry.
Clark was the one minister he'd like to work with, didn't he, on the platform in here today?
Tom McNally just said it was great news. But you see, they're right on the issue, aren't they, about prison, you see?
Ooh.
I mean, I'm standing here with Lord Shute and David. I mean, I think it is the case, don't you, that the government has dropped some right-wing policies that otherwise would have come to the fore?
Over to you,
Robert. Well, I suspect that is the case, but... you know, there's a long way to go yet, and we've got to be vigilant, and that's our job.
Well, we've cornered The Guardian's Martin Kettle and The Observer's Andrew Ronsley, who is down here to interview Paddy Ashdown at the conference this evening. Andrew, what do you think of the show so far?
I think it's pretty good. Obviously, underneath quite considerable enjoyment that they're in power, sitting in the cabinet for the first time in, 65 years. There's obviously quite a lot of unease, but there's by no means signs of a great revolt. But then I never thought there would be, and I'm sure you didn't, Michael or Martin. I mean, it'll be next year will be the real test of Nick Clegg's leadership and what this party is made of as a party. Now it is of power.
What are the pitfalls ahead next year, Martin? Are we getting it wrong when we say it's going to be the referendum on the alternative vote? He more or less implied yesterday it was all in the bag.
The AV vote is a big deal, and if they've lost that, there will be some... You know, they'll be uptight that they're not really going to get anything out of this coalition in the long run. But, of course, the other question is the cuts, the deficit reduction programme. That'll be well underway by this time next year. You know, there'll be blood on the floor. There'll be people losing jobs. Who can say what the state of the economy will be then? That's what it all is going to depend on through for 2015, it seems to me. If they pull that one off, if they can sell that, as Andrew Adonis said at the Guardian Fringe meeting yesterday, they'll do pretty well. But it's the big question in British politics for the Lib Dems.
I agree with Martin. The most important, the big macro political and macro economic decision or gamble they've taken is on the spending squeeze. Now, if they tip us into a double dip recession, or even if economic growth is really horribly sluggish, they could both be toast. But if he's gambled rightly, if he can turn around in 2015 and say to the country, look, it was very painful, but here are the gains, that obviously is the big gamble he's taken, that he'll be able to say that in the next election. And Lib Dems will get credit, he hopes, from some sections of the electorate, from being prepared to do really tough decisions in government.
Have either of you met Lib Dems who take you off into a corner and say, I really hate this, you know, we're stuck with it, I'm going along with it for the moment until it all goes wrong, then I'm going to say, I told you so?
Absolutely not. I haven't had one serious conversation of that kind all week. Yeah, there are one or two people who say things like, you know, I was pretty uncertain about it, but now I'm reconciled to it. There are one or two people who have lined up their betrayal story for when it all goes wrong. And you've had votes on schools. You've had votes this morning on welfare state and issues of that kind, you know, where it's clear where the centre of gravity of the party is to the left of where the coalition is. So, you know, there's plenty of potential for trouble. Whether it's going to blow the coalition out of the water is a different matter, though. I think, you know, you just have an unhappy party. That could be the reality through to about 2014. One thing that Nick Clegg did say this week that I think was really significant, important, was that the Lib Dems will fight every single seat in 2015 as an independent party. That means that probably in the spring of 2014, there'll have to be some kind of a transition in the politics away from these parties as cooperating parties in government to potentially competitive parties in elections. And that's going to be really interesting. I don't think anyone in the parties really even thought about how to do that.
No. Are they doing that?
I keep asking both Lib Dem people and Tories, actually, what's the undocking procedure when you get to about year four and you have to start reasserting your independent identities as parties? And that's a much harder question, I think, for the Lib Dems than it is for the Conservatives. And everybody who I ask at the moment either doesn't have an answer or just wants to park it. I mean, I know in a private session with some of his MPs, Nick Clegg was asked by a senior colleague, what's the exit strategy, Nick? Who got a rather frozen stare back from Nick Clegg, who really doesn't want to think about that because it's 3 or 4 years ahead. So he doesn't really want to go there at the moment. But it is a key question for the future, I agree.
I think that if you get to that point and the party is doing reasonably okay, is not in complete panic meltdown, then it seems to me inconceivable that Clegg in some way is not going to want to have the coalition re-elected. I think psychologically, if nothing else, and probably politically too, it's going to be really hard to say, well, we've done really well for 4 or 5 years and now we leap into the dark.
The difficulty there is he has to fight as an independent party. But once you go into coupons and deals and local deals, that's a slippery slope.
I mean, in a way, the alternative vote, if they could get it, could help that scenario in that you don't have to go into that awful business of, well, will Conservative MPs stand down here to help the Lib Dems and will Lib Dems stand down there, which older listeners will remember plagued the Liberal SDP alliance in the 80s. If you've got AV, you just say, look, if you're a Conservative, make Conservatives one, give your second preference to Lib Dems and vice versa. But it is a completely neuralgic issue, this. Whenever I say to Lib Dems privately, could you conceive of going to the next election and saying, re-elect the coalition, there might be a logic to doing that. They splutter into their lunch and say, no, 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 that's inconceivable.
Andrew Rawnsley and Martin Kettle there. Well, partners they may be, but there are precious few Conservatives in attendance in Liverpool this week. We keep being told that they were instructed to stay away, either not to cause trouble or not to crowd the Lib Dems' pitch. Anyway, we did manage to find one. A special case. Nigel Evans is Deputy Speaker of the House of Commons, therefore can't say much about politics, but he's still Tory MP for the Ribble Valley.
The funny thing is, I already know all the MPs that are here. There are a lot of activists from the North West, which is where my seat is, so we've had a good time. And as you know, we do similar things at party conferences. Yesterday I did the beer group thing at the Baltic Fleet. Yes. And we supped a fair few pints of Whopping Ale.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, well, I did ask if they had a coalition ale, and sadly they didn't. I was looking for a mixture of bitter and mild.
Duty, aha. Have you noticed any, I'm trying to put this tactfully, cultural differences between being at a Lib Dem conference and a Tory conference, or nowadays could they be mistaken for each other?
Well, I did pack sandals and a beard so that I could blend in. But sadly, I was the only one wearing sandals. I've been looking around. The funny thing is, I suppose the one thing, Michael, that people have told me that's different, and I don't know because it's my first one ever, is the security here is a lot harsher. Indeed, on day one, I did see Len Bidopic being turned away because he didn't have the right
pass. But that was nothing to do with the security. No, you're right. It is much much more real here now.
Yeah, but when they then say, God, isn't it awful, the security? And I'm saying to them, well, I think the one thing that Don Foster will recognise is the security of the Tory party conference will be 3 times more severe. For a start, as you know, the conference hotel across the way here, Jury's, anybody can walk in.
Also visiting both conferences for the BBC was his Lib Dem counterpart, also with me, Don Foster.
I think, you know, post the leader's speech, it's the first time, of course, we've ever had a leader's speech early on in the conference. We're not used to having sort of prime ministers who come in and go, and now we've got to get used to deputy prime ministers who fly off to New York so they can't be with us for the whole of the conference.
People are okay about that. Do they recognise that as a decent alibi, or do they think he's getting out of it before they lynch him?
Well, they haven't lynched him in the time he was here. He came very early. He's done things that no other party leader has done in government, which is to have sort of Q&As totally unscripted, and a number of opportunities for delegates long before he left for New York to be able to say what they thought during an open and televised consultative session on the future strategy of the party, which had some critical stuff. He wasn't lynched during any of that. Obviously, some people with a number of concerns. I think he addressed many of those in his conference speech. Generally, people have stayed. People are going to meetings. Life carries on without the Deputy Prime Minister in our midst.
We'll take that as a thumbs up. Thank you very much. Good luck at the Tories.
Thank you.
Don Foster there, the Lib Dem, who took Bath from coalition partner Chris Patten all those years ago. We'll try and catch up with him in Birmingham in a couple of weeks. What else today? Well, Chris Huhne announced a new policy to force energy companies to be more transparent on their prices. But one of the liveliest sessions in the hall, you'll not be surprised at this one, concerned the passing of a motion calling for equal recognition in law and every other way of gay civil partnerships. They want marriage to be marriage, and we heard some fascinating stories, both sides of the argument. The debate brought several impassioned speeches, one of them from former Met police copper and mayoral candidate Brian Paddick. Here he is.
I have to say, I never thought I would be here standing talking about this issue. First reason was because in 1983, I got married in the UK. So you've worked that one out. I got married to a woman. But after 5 years, I told her I was gay. She's been one of my biggest supporters ever since, and I'm very grateful for her support. The second reason was because when I did become a gay man, I initially believed that I didn't want to be part, even if I found somebody that I wanted to spend the rest of my life with, I didn't want to be part of a straight institution, i.e. marriage. And there are still people who think like that today. I'll come back to that one. And the third reason why I thought I would never be speaking about this issue was because I never realised that I was going to fall in love with a gorgeous Norwegian man. And in January 2009, the Norwegians, who were infuriatingly logical, decided that if there was to be no discrimination between straight people and gay people, why on earth do we have civil partnerships for gay people and marriages for straight people? So we waited until January 2009, and then we got married in Oslo, in Norway. Yet we are only married in Norway. Here, it reverts to a civil partnership, and that doesn't feel the same at all.
Not sure if there wasn't a bit too much detail there, Brian. Anyway, we're on the last day of the conference coming up tomorrow. The old Ferris wheel, you may be able to hear it, is still churning away in the background. It's a cloudy Liverpool sky, but I think the party leadership will be relieved that it's gone as well as it has. The leader's safely away in New York. But a word of warning. Tomorrow's big speaker is Vince Cable. I see him as the Hamlet of the coalition. Which way will he jump? It's Vince's big day, and the word is he's going to say things, the old Vince, the old Keynesian, left-wing Vince, whom we knew before he became a minister. I think he's going to let his hair down a bit. That's the wrong thing to say about Vince Cable, but watch this space. Hope you join us tomorrow. This is Michael White. Our producer was Phil Maynard.